ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टतृषाम् एष पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः। ग्रन्थराज श्रीमद्भागवतम् की जय। We have today is a very auspicious occasion, especially for the purpose of an Artanivritti. Today is called Vijayadashami, better known as Ram Vijayotsav. Of course, this is the day on which Lord Ramchandra killed Ravana. Sri Sri Sitaram Ki Jai. And it's also known amongst a certain group as the day in which Durga Devi killed another great demon, Mahishasura. So in general, it seems a very good day for Artanivritti, freeing ourselves of our own demons, internal or external. So it's also the appearance day, the anniversary of the appearance day of Madhvacharya, who appeared on Vijayadashami Day in South India, sometime in the maybe 12th century, 13th century. And we can say a few words about them. In 1972 in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada was describing this day, and he said that it can be observed by discussion on the pastimes of Lord Ram and also Madhvacharya. So here we have Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, which is entitled King Chitraketu's Lamentation. And today we will begin with text number 2. And because there's no purport, we'll read until text number 4, which I believe you have on the board. Prayo mumukshavastesham. Okay. So, Devanam shuddhasatvanam rishinam chamalatmanam bhaktir mukunda charane na prayeno pajayate. Translation. Demigods situated in the mode of goodness and great saints cleansed of the dirt of material enjoyment hardly ever render pure devotional service at the lotus feet of Mukunda. Therefore, this is parenthetical, therefore how could Vritrasura have become such a great devotee? This is continuing yesterday's questions. O learned Brahman, demons are generally sinful, being obsessed with the modes of passion and ignorance. How then could Vritrasura have attained such exalted love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana? The next several verses are just elaborating on this theme, and we'll speak a little bit about that. Rajobhi samasankhyatah parthivairiva jantavah tesham ye kechane hante shreyo vai manujadayah. Translation. In this material world, there are as many living entities as there are atoms. Parthiva means the grains of dust. As many grains of sand or grains of dust as you find in this world, there are that many living entities. Think about it. We say 8,400,000. Those are categories. But within each of those categories, there are subcategories. Just like within the human race, we know there are different races as well, different ethnic groups, different personality types. It's infinite. All of them are meant ultimately for providing the Supreme Personality of Godhead with enjoyment in the form of various rasas, nana rasa. So anyway, there are as many living entities as atoms. Among these living entities, a very few are human beings, and among them, few are interested in following religious principles. That brings us to today's text. Prayo mumukshavaste sham kechanaiva dvijottama mumukshunam sahasresho kashchin mucheta siddhyati prayo mumukshavaste sham kechanaiva jujottama mumukshunam sahasresho kashchin mucheta siddhyati prayo mumukshavaste sham kechanaiva jujottama mumukshunam sahasresho kashchin mucheta siddhyati. Ladies. Prayo mumukshavaste sham kechanaiva dvijottama mumukshunam sahasresho kashchin mucheta siddhyati. Prayah, almost always, mumukshavaha, persons interested in liberation. Tesham, of them. Kechana, some. Eva, indeed. Dvija uttama, O best of the Brahmanas. Mumukshunam, of those who desire to be liberated. Sahasresho, and many thousands. Kaschit, someone, mucheta, may be actually liberated. Siddhyati, someone is perfect. Translation. O best of the Brahmanas, Shukdev Goswami, out of many persons who follow religious principles, only a few desire liberation from the material world. Among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation, giving up material attachment to society, friendship, love, country, home, wife, and children. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who can understand the true meaning of liberation is very rare. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Savior of the Whole World. There are four classes of men, namely karmis, gyanis, yogis, and bhaktas. This statement pertains especially to karmis and gyanis. A karmi tries to be happy within this material world by changing from one body to another. His objective is bodily comfort, either in this planet or in another. When such a person becomes a gyani, however, he aspires for liberation from material bondage. Among many such persons who aspire for liberation, one may actually be liberated during his life. Such a person gives up his attachment for society, friendship, love, country, family, wife, and children. Among many such persons who are in the vanaprastha stage, one may understand the value of becoming a sannyasi, completely accepting the renounced order of life. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarnam Madeka Bandhomat Sangin Mad Guru Mad Mahatana Manyastaraka Mad Bhagya Mad Ananda Namostate. There are some things we can say here. As we already have pointed out, these first several verses are really leading up to the next verse, fairly often quoted verse, Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanaha sudurlabha prashantatma kotishwapi mahanune. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. So according to the acharyas commenting on these verses, all these statements are being given, progressive statements about the rarity of, first of all, achieving a human form of life. After all, if you try to wrap your mind around the concept of how many particles of dust there are in this world, and then consider that there are as many options, as many life forms available as there are such particles, and then you think about the human species as being only one of them, that's rare enough in itself. In a sense, you can say we've come 90% of our journey just by taking birth as human beings. So we're very fortunate. But among so many human beings, not so many are civilized, in case you haven't noticed. And amongst those who are civilized, very few are actually interested in liberation. Most of us, we want to continue with our bodily comfort, isn't it? Pretty much. What does it mean to be liberated? What does it mean to be in bondage, first of all, as Prabhupada said here? When such a person becomes a jnani, however, he aspires for liberation from material bondage. What is that material bondage? Well, we all may be getting hungry right now. That's one of the things we're bound to. We need to eat. We get tired. You can only go for so long before you basically have to collapse. That's bondage. You don't have a choice about it. You're getting old. Pretty soon everything is going to start shutting down. The organs are going to stop working. The brain is no longer going to work in sync with the organs, nor even with itself. Memory will be gone. Eyesight will be gone. Hearing gone. When you become agitated by that loss of independence, then your social graces also go. And it's revealed who's liberated and who's not. And this is coming down the tubes. There's no choice about it. And ultimately, death. Mrityu. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma, as Prabhupada says. This is called pavarga, material existence. And we are very much sewn up by the modes of material nature. She's got us completely just wrapped up. We have no escape, as we hear from Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So when someone realizes this, then he becomes interested in liberation. Interested in liberation. This is a few categories ago, isn't it? What does it say here? Anyway. Of so many, very few are living beings, and among them very few are interested in following the principles. That means Shreya, the word is used. Shreya. like Arjuna was asking in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, what's the thing of ultimate value? What's ultimately preeminent or excellent for me? What's my long-term interest and in the best interest of the society? That's called Shreyas. Not very many people care about it. Most of them are just interested in bodily comfort, but even among those who want liberation, they don't want it bad enough. Among many thousands who desire liberation, one may actually achieve liberation, giving up all the material attachments. And among many thousands of such liberated persons, one who actually understands what liberation is valuable for is even more rare. And among those people who understand liberation and have achieved it, millions of such persons, it says, Kotishu api, one may become a devotee of Krishna. So what are we dealing with? Do we really know what is bhakti? What is this process? We don't really know. How can we know? Now, every truth is contextual. In this world, there is no absolute truth that is not conditioned by its context. In the spiritual world even, also, every truth is contextual. It's conditioned by another maya, yoga maya. But there's no such thing as an absolute truth. In a sense, you can say that. We would actually agree with our existentialist friends who come to that. It's the only logical conclusion that one can come to by the process of speculation. So context is important. When we read this verse, there's another famous verse that we think of. Let me just recite the Sanskrit for you. Mumukshunam sahasreshu kashchin mucheta siddhyati. What are you thinking of from Bhagavad Gita? Obviously, munashyanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati. He tries. Yatatam, and of those who are trying, api, what is it? Yatatam? Yeah. Kashchin mam veti tatvata. Krishna says, hardly one knows me in truth. What's the context in which Krishna says that? We need to read Bhagavad Gita whole chapters at a time. It's a good idea. BBT has published this little chanting Bhagavad Gita. Little small paperback, you can just go through the Sanskrit, of course, maybe that presupposes that you know Sanskrit. But at any rate, it's good to read the translations also, one after another, so we can get a sense of the context in which this instruction has been given by the Lord to Arjuna, and through him to us. He says, in the beginning of chapter 7, Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjad mat ashraya. Love me. Become attached to me. Increase your attachment to me. This is what Krishna is asking. Asamshayam samagramam yatagnyasasi tatshrino. Because by doing that, you will understand everything. You will have jnana. Acharya's commenting, particularly Jiva Goswami commenting on this passage, he quotes a number of verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam and other places. For example, in Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text Number 24, Sattvam yad brahma darshanam. It's through sattva guna that we can get knowledge of Brahma. We see Brahma, the absolute truth. Or kaivalyam sattvikam jnanam. Through sattva guna we get knowledge of the ultimate harmony of all existence. Right? So jnana is important. And Krishna says here, therefore, the next verse after this, he says, if you're interested in such devotion, if you want to love me, just hear, hear, hear. And then he says, continuing, Jnanam teham savijnanam idam vakshyami asheshataha. I am explaining at length this thing. Knowledge, what is knowledge, or awareness is a more accurate translation for that term. Jnana, to be aware. And vijnana, what does vijnana means? What is the practical utility of that understanding? Knowledge is hypothetical. Hypothesis is not practical. It's necessarily just theory, and we all know what people think of theorists. That's why Brahmins are persecuted in the modern world. Right? It's a greater offense to kill a homosexual or a member of a racial minority than it is to kill a Brahmin in Kali Yuga, it would seem, sometimes. Anyway, theorists are not very much valued because, and Prabhupada also would emphasize, what is the practical utility? That's called vijnana. So, okay, so you know what is Brahma, that Parambrahma, that's Krishna. Who is this, what is this Krishna? What's his name? Who does he live with? What does he want? What does he do? You need to know these things also. So, jnanam teham sa vijnanam. Idam vakshyami. Krishna says, I'm telling you this. Asheshataha. Yad gyatva neha bhuyo anyat. If you understand this, gyatavyam avishishyate. Nothing remains to be known. Therefore, the acharyas are asking, how is it that we see this Vritrasura? He really didn't seem to have a very pious background. And how could he get this, as yesterday's verse said, drhamati? What does drhamati mean? Anybody remember from yesterday? Fixed intelligence. Yesham tuantagatam papam jnanam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam drdhavrta. This drdhamati, according to Sridhar Swami, means bhakti. And Krishna says in chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita, you get bhakti if you are pious. From cultivating sattva guna and the jnana that characterizes it, you get pious enough that you can actually sustain pure devotional service, that you can sustain a desire for liberation, the platform on which you can really perform that pure devotional service. So knowledge is important. But what was the reason for his knowledge? And how do we get this knowledge? As Krishna is telling us, if you have this understanding, if you can become attached to me through cultivating knowledge and vijnana as well, then nothing remains to be known. So how do we, Krishna is no longer here, what do we do? Evam param para prapsam imam. Krishna has already said in chapter 4. This thing is coming down through disciplic succession. From Brahma, from Krishna, Brahma got it. Brahma taught it to his disciple Vyas. Vyas taught it to his disciple. Who is his chief disciple? Madhvacharya, whose appearance day is today. So evam param para praptam. In this way, we also get this. It's coming down through these wonderful books of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. These wonderful books that have all knowledge. We sing every day. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chiteti Koriya Aikya Arana Karihumani Asha. Don't desire to do anything else than make your intelligence and your mind, your heart, one with the instructions that are here. How do we do that? By hearing constantly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. But instead we choose to hear from Loy Bajar books. Or even worse. Because we're not punyavan. We're not pious enough. So how did he get so pious, this Vritrasura? He took birth as a demon, but he was so pious that he astonished even Indra, the king of the sattvic demigods in heaven. How did he get it? This is a natural question that arises. Therefore, this whole narrative begins of his previous life as King Chitraketu. He got mercy from Narad Muni. He met a devotee, and Jiva Goswami emphasizes, Bhagavat Kripa is the only way. Parimala Bhuta. Bhagavat Kripa Parimala Bhuta. He has to have had the scent of the mercy of a pure devotee. Some fragrance of mercy, some blessings must have come. Some contact with the devotees must have been there. That is the reason that he had this devotional attitude, Vritrasura. So, tulayama lavenapi. Even a moment's association with a pure devotee can give one all perfection. This is also quoted by Jiva Goswami, this verse from the first canto, chapter 18, text 13. And then finally, Jiva Goswami quotes the next verse, which I've already done. So these all are pointing out the rarity of devotional service, and more than that, they're suggesting the means by which we can attain that thing which is so rare. It's not going to come except through the mercy of the devotees. Therefore, we appreciate His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who worked very hard throughout the night while we all slept in ignorance just to produce these books out of love for people that he'd never met. The denizens of Kali Yuga, who otherwise we cannot describe. Sometimes we look around or see the news. It's just mind-boggling how degraded things have become even within the last 10 or 20 years and where they will be after 100 or two. We can't think of it, but we do know where we came from, and we can think of that. And we can cultivate the gratitude to Srila Prabhupada and those who represent him. They are these liberated souls as well. Those who are particularly who are directly representing, transparently representing his divine grace in the form of distributing his books. These are the great souls, and they're very, very rare. So we can appreciate in that way. So, today is the appearance of Madhvacharya. Of course, Ramchandra also killed Ravana. We've mentioned already. Madhvacharya is very intimately related with Lord Ramchandra. How so? He's considered to be a triple incarnation in that tradition, the triple incarnation of Hanuman and also Bhima and also Vayu, all in one. So we see in Madhva's life, he displayed characteristics of each of these great devotees. He had this superhuman appetite. It's described that once when he was touring South India, wherever he was going, he was becoming very prominent as a preacher, even though controversial at the same time. Because right in the lap of the stronghold of Advaita Vedanta, Madhvacharya started turning all of Shankaracharya's views on its head. Deliberately, just saying this is all nonsense. What we cannot imagine how controversial and radical and astonishing it must have been. Anyway, when he was preaching, he was having wonderful success because he was so brilliant. It's described that when his teacher was trying to teach him the Vedas, Madhvacharya was more interested in playing than in studying. He had this, after all, Hanuman, what do monkeys do? They play. In case you haven't had enough experience, you spend some time in Vrindavan, you'll see what they do. So Madhvacharya, he was always sporting. He was extremely attached to sports as his youth, and his teacher became suspicious that how can you possibly learn these Vedas if you're always playing all the time instead of studying? And Madhvacharya said, "You're unfairly accusing me." He said, "I know all the Vedas." He said, "Well, tell me about the last lesson." He said, "No, I'll tell you about the entire Veda." And he recited the entire Veda in question, forward, backward, word by word, and in every way. He recited the entire Veda. His teacher was completely astonished. On another occasion, he made this bold claim that every word of the Vedas and every verse has three meanings, every word in the Vedas. And then he said, in addition, every verse in the Mahabharata has 10 meanings, and every name in the Vishnu Sahasranama has 100 meanings. These are the kinds of radical statements he would make. And so those in his audience, they naturally raised some questions about this, that how can you know this? So then he began by reciting Vishnu Sahasranama. Anybody know it? Om Vishvam Vishnur Vashatkaro Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. So Vishva is the first name of Vishnu. He gave 100 meanings of the word Vishva right on the spot, off the top of his head. And his audience was so astounded, they humbly accepted. So he was so brilliant. So in South India, he was being treated like a king during his tour there. Wherever he would go, they would lavish upon him and his party so many feasts and so much dhumdham, as they say in Hindi. Opulent worship they were showing and respect they were showing for Madhvacharya. So after one huge feast, his host once brought a huge bunch of perhaps 200 bananas and asked that Madhva please bless them so we can distribute prasadam to the many, many people who couldn't even get into the program. And Madhva casually, very nonchalantly, sat down and ate every single one of them. This is after a feast. And it said that Madhvacharya did this on a number of occasions. One time it said that there were 4,000 bananas and 30 big pots of milk, and he drank it all, again, after a feast. When his astonished host asked him, how could you possibly do this? Madhva simply, as a matter of fact, he said, well, my powers of digestion are superhuman, to state the obvious. It said that when he was a child, his mother would call him from wherever he was playing, and Madhva would respond by jumping from wherever he was, even if it was in the next district. Again, if you can jump to Lanka, why not? He was also extraordinarily intelligent, as we know. He knew so many languages. You know, people like to discredit these things. Oh, this is hagiography, they call it. Right? A deliberately fabricated or exaggerated account of the miracles performed by some great saintly person. Now, if Gopi Pranadana Prabhu can speak in Chinese and in Russian and Sanskrit and Hindi and Bengali and so many other languages, then why not Madhvacharya? So when he went on his North Indian tour also, they came across a district where on the other side of the Ganga was only Muslims allowed. Hindus were not allowed to go there. But Madhva and his party needed to get that way in order to get to Badrikashram. Furthermore, it was the Ganges was very fast, powerful current, and really there was no boat available. Nobody would go because they weren't allowed. So what to do? Madhva, he held the hand of his disciple, who held the hand of each successive disciple, and they formed a human chain. Madhva walked across the water to get to the other side. And when he got there, there was the Muslim army of, obviously, they arrested them all and took, and Madhva said, please take me to your leader. And they did that, and Madhva began to converse with this gentleman in Persian. And he was so astounded, this Muslim leader, first of all at the boldness of this Hindu monk, but also at his brilliance, that he not only let him go, but he offered his obeisances. He gave him an escort to find the quickest way towards Badrikashram. When he went there, he learned from Vyasadeva. He got the imprimatur, as we say, of Vyas for his commentary on Brahma Sutra. Because wherever he was preaching, mainly against Advaitavad, Shankar's philosophy, he was raising eyebrows. People were getting, especially in the south, in the cradle of Advaita, the pandits were very much up in arms against him. And Madhva's only defense for the first decade of his preaching was that, well, I'm going to write. They said, if you don't like Shankara's commentary, then you need to write your own. And Madhva promised, yes, I'll do so. So now he went to Vyas and got the blessings of Vyas, his guru, his real guru. And he wrote his commentary there, and then he brought it back, and by this time his future was sealed as an acharya destined to change the history of religious history of the subcontinent and the world. So at this time he began to think that now I've become a big preacher and I've written the commentary and these views are being accepted. He considered it the purpose of his birth. He explicitly said that the purpose of his birth in this world was to overturn Advaita, was to completely smash Shankaracharya's nonsense Kevaladvaita Vad. And he did that very vigorously. In fact, of the some nearly 40 works that Madhva wrote, most of them were commentaries on the Shrutis. At least half of them were commentaries on the Shrutis, and the others, mostly they were meant for defeating Advaitavad. In fact, he's even been criticized by some that he spent more time bashing Mayavad than he did establishing his own views. So he saw that as his raison d'être, as they say in French, his reason for existence. So this was Madhvacharya, great, powerful Acharya, and we have inherited the mantle, as it would be indicated by Srila Prabhupada's self-composed pranam mantra. Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarane. To destroy the nihilism and the impersonalism that pervade the world's popular philosophy. And modern philosophy in general is pervaded by these notions that there's no absolute truth or that at best it's impersonal. Among those who still have any sense of the spiritual, they're going to insist that some sort of pantheistic reality, that there's this all-pervading universal spirit that cannot be defined, ineffable sort of idea like this. So Srila Prabhupada also saw it as his purpose to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We all know, instead of the International Society for God Consciousness that he was advised to found, Prabhupada said no. International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is Vijnanam. We know his name. We know what he wants. And if we are amongst this category of Muktanam Api Siddhanam, Narayana Parayana, then maybe we know how to serve him also. That's called Siddha Deha. It's the perfection of bhakti. But we don't get it except through the mercy of these great souls. And today we have the opportunity to pray to Madhva for his mercy. After he came back from his North Indian tour, he founded this Sri Krishna Mart in Udupi. You can go and visit. And the beautiful deity of Krishna is established there by Madhva. And he made 8 chief disciples, and they each founded their own mats. And in this way, the Madhva line is preaching since that time, coming in the line of Brahma. And this deity is considered to be especially efficacious for anartha nivritti. Again, we've returned to the same theme. So today it's a good opportunity to pray to Madhva, and to pray to Krishna for us, that all of our anarthas are removed. He's already written so many things that help us to do that. And as we see throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, he's been quoted, or his representative, chief representative, Vijayadwaj Tirtha, has also been quoted. So these are some things we can think about today with regards to this topic. About Ram Vijayotsava, I don't think we really have time to get into it too much, but for those of you who are interested, you can read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 23, to 25. They deal with Ram's incarnation. So does Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 22. And 9th Canto especially is where we find the pastimes of Ram and killing Ravana in particular. That will be 9th Canto, Chapter 10, Text 23 through 28. So again, today is Ram Vijayotsava, and it's also the appearance of Madhvacharya, and we're very, very fortunate to be here in New Dwarka, at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, engaged in devotional service under the guidance of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who is giving us the entrance into the realm of pure devotional service. We'll stop there. Anybody have any questions or comments? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.